Blog Talk Radio.
TMGS starts right now. Time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is June 24th, 2023, and you're tuned into the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Happy Saturday, everyone, and welcome to the show. Glad that you're all here. And I'm just opening up the chat room, so for you folks that are listening online, you'll be able to post your questions or comments momentarily. So, what do we have for today's show? Well, of course, we're going to start it off with a little bit of political news, because here we have indictment part two. Yep, Donald Trump. You know, like the ever-ready battery just keeps going and going and going. Having problems keeping lawyers, you know. Many of them are like, hey, can't work with this guy. He don't want to listen. Many of them are dropping like flies, as they say, right? You know, it's interesting. And then listening to some of the things or some of the comments he's made, it didn't make any sense to me. I mean, honestly, I know many of us have moved before, right? Many of us have moved. But you don't pack your underwear and your jock strap with your dishes, do you? You don't pack, you know, your food with your toiletries, do you? So how do you pack your, you know, your golf clubs with documents? Okay. I'm gonna hold off. I'm gonna wait and give folks a chance to chime in. I do see some numbers popping up on the board. But that's one topic we're going to talk about, is this new indictment and just the whole thing about the election period. I haven't heard many people discussing the issues. It's all about, you know, the parties, but not the issues. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the conversations are about what this party didn't do or didn't, you know, or what, you know, it's just a bickering among parties. But I haven't heard much about the issues from either party, okay? Then we're going to discuss the implosion of the submersive, OceanGate, privately owned company. In fact, one of the founders or owners of the company was on the what was on the submersive when it imploded, and so we're going to discuss that because the internet is cruel. Seriously, that I've seen cartoons and you know all kinds of things being said, and you know I think that people you know sometimes when people die, celebrities die, and some comics, you know, like 2 days after their death, make a joke out of it, and some folks will say, oh, too soon, too soon. I think you guys are a little bit too soon with your comments that you have. I mean, these are people, okay? They weren't, none of them were criminals or whatever. You know, it's just a sad situation that occurred. But some of y'all are, some of y'all are going to go to hell with your drawers on fire with some of the things you've been saying. And then in the second hour, we have a roundtable with some officers scheduled to join us. There's a new person who's joined us, Sarge, a couple of weeks ago, former Chicago officer, I believe. Yeah, Chicago officer. And you guys know Officer Harper. He's going to be joining us. And Crenshaw is scheduled to join us also, okay? So, yeah, I want you guys to, you know, definitely you know, stay on board here for the next 2 hours. Now, I'm waiting for my co-host, the lady of the house, to join. I don't know where she is. She normally is here on time, unless she has an event. But, let me take a look here. She was just here a moment ago, and she dropped, but I think she's coming back. Okay, so. Let me open up. I see that Sarge is in the house, so let me go ahead and open up his mic. Okay. And you're on. Happy Saturday, Sarge. How you doing? Okay. Make sure that should be Sarge. It is. You might have yourself on mute. You hit the number one, but if you're not ready to chime in, okay. You might have yourself.
Yes, you are absolutely correct, sir. You are as prescient as you are stimulating. And I'd like to thank you for opening my mic so I can speak to Mike. I appreciate it very much. How you doing?
Well, thank you for coming in and joining us. I look forward to a great conversation. You know, today, like I said, we're going to run across some great topics here. And I'm just making sure that all of our all of our mics are there and everybody is available here. I'm trying to see where is Janet. She should be dropping in momentarily. So how's your day so far before we get into the conversation? How's your day so far? By the way, for you guys who don't know, Sarge chimed in 2 weeks ago and joined the conversation. So he's kind enough to come back and join us. And so that the listeners can get a little familiar with who you are because you're going to be close to the show. Give us a little background about yourself. Because I'm sure I had it right. You're a former Chicago police officer, right?
Well, I was a state policeman who worked in Chicago, an Illinois state police.
Oh, okay.
Well, most of my career was in Chicago, in Cook County. So I guess in that sense, I was a Chicago police officer. But I actually worked for the state of Illinois and drew my paycheck from the state of Illinois. And my boss was the governor of the state of Illinois, whoever happened to be.
Okay. All right. So Cook County. I understand an interesting place. I've never been to Chicago, by the way. Never been to Illinois, period. But I understand very very interesting place. Hopefully I'll get a chance to visit there. So let me go ahead and get started with the first topic with the political aspect. And I was hoping that Janet would be here to join us, but I guess she is probably tied up for the moment. But let me ask you this now. Okay, so here's the second indictment on former President Donald Trump. There's people saying, well, he's being wrongfully indicted. How come this didn't happen with this, that, and the other? Other presidents have taken documents and they weren't indicted and everything. But tell me what your thoughts are, because here's the difference I look at it. Yes, Biden had documents. Pence had documents. And when they were asked for them, they were like, oh, okay, here you go. But Donald Trump just didn't do that. He was like, mm-mm. And he was recorded saying things of where he was, just didn't want to give them up. And with that being said, too, my question to all three of those presidents and vice president, why did you have them in the first place, and what are you going to use them for? So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think I can distill this whole controversy, at least from my point of view, by simply stating what this is all about from the onset. And that is mm-hmm. that this is literally a civil Presidential Records Act dispute between the National okay. Archivist and the former president that has been transmogrified and mutated into a criminal case by a rogue Department of Justice, an attorney general, and an FBI deep state determined to put a man in jail who represents an existential threat to their continued perfidy. It's just that
okay.
simple.
Okay, so
Hold on, sir.
Because the lady of the house has joined us, so let me go ahead and introduce her, all right? So, and I just opened her mic, so you guys, here she is. She's running a little late, but that's all right. Ms. Janet Pollack Hawkins Davis.
Good evening, everyone. Sorry I'm late. I had to get my dog settled before I started the show. Yeah.
No problem. No problem. Well, I guess you heard the question that I just posed to Sarge, and mm-hmm. he just briefly had was starting to give his reaction or his opinion about what's going on. But I want him to go ahead and finish, and then then I'll let you go ahead and mm-hmm. give your rebuttal to what he's saying. Go ahead, Sarge.
Thank you very much, sir. I'd love to finish. I'll try to make it as succinct as I can. Okay, first of all, you got to understand, I've read the indictment. Counts 1 to 31 deal with a violation of United States Code, Chapter 18, Section 793E, which is mishandling information of national defense interests. It's kind of related to classified information, but not exactly. That's counts 1 to 31. The rest of the counts, remaining counts, 31 to 38, deal with process crimes arising out of the investigation, like obstruction of justice, lying, obstructing investigators, lying to investigators, concealing evidence, and the like. So that's what you got here. You got that. President, that is a general statute that applies to every citizen. It does. That the Espionage Act, which was created in 1917, applies to every citizen. And in particular, this particular section, 793, was created in 1948 because the government was concerned about defense contractors having access to defense materials, allowing the information contained therein to be misused. So that's what he's being charged with. Now, that's a general statute that applies to everyone, except for the fact that there is one statute, a very specific statute, called the Presidential Records Act, that only deals with one person at a time or just a few. It's called presidents and former presidents. It has no other application to anyone else in the world or the United States. As a general rule in law, in law enforcement, when you have a general statute and a specific statute, the specific statute generally takes precedent. Now, here's what did not occur. The Department of Justice did not, I repeat, did not complete the steps that are outlined in the Presidential Records Act for recovering documents that the archivist thinks they should have in their possession. They did not submit it to a federal judge for mediation, as the Presidential Records Act requires. They did not subpoena the documents. They couldn't do it, but they could ask a federal judge to subpoena the documents. And if Donald Trump did not comply with the federal subpoena from a federal judge based upon his mediation between the two parties, then he could have been held in civil contempt of court. That was not done. What the Department of Justice did was to go to a federal magistrate and get an emergency search warrant, and they said that national security was in peril. So they literally short-circuited the normal procedure, as was done when Barack Obama, who had to pay $800,000 to have classified documents that he had stored in a furniture warehouse in Elgin, Illinois, moved back to the National Archive after it was determined he shouldn't have them. He paid $800,000 to have them moved back to Washington, D.C., and it was mediated through the Presidential Records Act. And the same thing occurred with many other presidents. In this case, it wasn't done with Donald Trump, and we all know why.
Okay, so hold tight a minute. Hold tight. I'm gonna let you continue, but let's nibble on that what you just said. That they immediately went to a judge in order to retrieve the documents. Now, I want Janet to
But not under the Presidential Records Act.
I'm sorry. Okay, so but I want Janet to go ahead and chime in. Janet, do you believe that to be true?
Well, I know first of all, the archives had been talking with Trump for quite some time, trying to get documents back, and he continued to say they were his. He told different things. It's all been on TV, how he declassified the documents, you know, by just saying he declassified them. He said they were his. They were trying to get the documents back because there was top secret, classified, and there were other documents that they were concerned about because they were out in the open. When they went there to Mar-a-Lago and saw some of the boxes, they realized they were out in the open, and they had told Trump, or the attorneys, that they needed to secure those documents. They weren't really secured. He moved them. He went through them. You know, people have gone to jail for far less. Obama gave documents back, Pence gave documents back, and Biden gave all give those documents back. He chose not
and
to.
Now, right. And now, and let me say this now, okay. What I find interesting more so is this, for the fact that when they realize, hey, look, you guys got some stuff that you need to give back. And all three of those individuals gave them back. They did not try to hold on to them. They did not try to say, well, they're mine. None of them did that. Okay. And like Janet just said, they tried to talk to Trump. Hey, look, man, welcome back over. But he was defiant. And so I think that's where the other charges come into play. Keep in mind, you know, every day there are people being prosecuted for certain
things.
And I have to throw this in here. I do believe that there was a fear because of how chummy Donald Trump has been with our adversaries. There was immediate concern.
Yes.
I mean, he's been very chummy. No other president has said that Putin's a good guy. He told me he didn't do this, so I believe him. He told me.
And Trump turned and Putin turned around and said he did do it.
And then there's another thing. Well, let me finish this part, and then I'll let everybody elaborate and speak what they speak. I understand if they did it in a certain manner, but they probably felt, hey, look, this is serious here, because here again. He says, Putin said, I didn't do it, so I believe what Putin said. Jim Kong, what's his name, the North Korea president, he wrote me a love letter. He's a good guy. He says,
I mean, really? You know, I mean, I can see the concern. And let alone these individuals that are coming to Mar-a-Lago, you know, from other countries, you know, and have free reign to walk around the property, pretty much. And here you got top secret documents there. I can see the concern. That can put many, many people's lives in danger. That really can. And, you know, we don't know how this is going to play out. I mean, he's been indicted, but, you know, it hasn't gone to court yet. A lot of folks say, oh, he's been indicted. He's gone. He's a goner. I still say I do not believe Donald Trump will spend a day in jail. I truly don't. I think that if anything, he would probably been, I mean, if anything, they'll try to make it permanent that he never is able to run for office in any capacity as far as his investments and this, that, and the other, because really he doesn't have to worry about money that much anymore, because the money's not going to the campaign as much as it's going to his defense, in my opinion. And he's
all
raised
right, now,
a lot
gotta,
of money. Right? Go ahead, Sarge.
Okay, you have to understand. Now you're assuming that this case is going to survive the motions to dismiss. Now, I'm not saying it will, because his lawyers are going to make numerous motions to dismiss this case before it even goes.
Correct.
They're going to cite, among other things, the Supreme Court decision, Department of the Navy versus Egan, 1988, well within living memory, which says that the President of the United States has near plenary power to declassify anything that he sees fit to declassify. They're going to cite the 11th
but
Circuit
there a
Court
process?
Of
But isn't there a process,
and,
though? There is a process, right?
No, there isn't.
He can't
the
say,
president
he can't
cannot
say,
be. No, sir. I'll tell you why. Because that would mean that a bureaucrat to whom they have to report to the president, remember, Article 2, Section 1 says all, without that means all, that means without exception, all executive authority is invested in a singular president of the United States. That means that all of the people who work for the executive branch get their authority from him, not him from them. What you are saying would mean that a bureaucrat would have the authority to gainsay the president's decision to declassify. If I was to accept what you say, that means the bureaucrat decided to drag his feet, or the bureaucrat flat out said this material should not be declassified, Mr. President. It would mean that they would have the ultimate veto authority over the president. The Constitution is clear. They don't. The only reason they have the authority is because the president can't do everything by himself. He's got to delegate. The very action of his saying that thing is delegated, his very action of his removing it and taking it with him is declassification. Inherently, no bureaucrat can gainsay his decision on this, not on this. So see, and again, the next thing I'd like to emphasize here, I mean, I know you guys are saying things that would apply to everybody else but a president. That's why they made the Presidential Records Act. I want to keep emphasizing this. Look, because other presidents did something, that means that binds this one. Because Obama did something, thought he should give him back, or because Bush thought he should give him back, or Pence thought he should give him back, but does not bind President Trump, if he really thinks it's his to retain. So he invoked his authority as a former president. It was never submitted to the Presidential Records Act mediation process. This is what I want to keep emphasizing. They cited an emergency that couldn't wait. They're going to have to justify that in court. And I want to see what their justification for it is. I want to hear. There are millions of eyes that are going to be watching this. You're not going to be able to get away with this like this is some kind of drug dealing thug on the corner. This is a former president of the United States. Millions of eyes are going to be looking at it, including
he's
other
no
lawyers, top lawyers around
the world.
He's
no longer president. We only have one
when
president at a time.
When he took those documents with him, yes, he was. Until noon on the 20th of January, he was the president of the United States. And if you remove him from that office before then, he was the president at that moment.
Okay, so hold tight a minute. And when you're president of the United States, what is the archive for?
Okay, so hold tight for a minute, everybody.
That a president does hold tight, supposed to go
everybody,
to the archive.
Everybody, hold on a minute, please, please. Let's not talk over each other because I want to hear what everybody has to say. And let's take a breather here. I want to ask this question, though. Did everyone see the conversation that he had with Brett Barr on Fox News? Okay. Did you see that, Sarge?
Yes.
I heard about it. I didn't see it. But I got the gist of it.
Hold tight a minute. I want to see if you can hear this because I want to play it, a segment from it. Let me see if you can hear us. Hold tight a second. And, let me get this little advertisement out the way, and then we'll get a listen to it. Okay, here we go. Taking a second. Yeah. All right, it should pop up in a second.
All my personal things out. I don't want to hand that over to Nari yet. And I was very busy, as you sort of seen.
Yeah, but according to the indictment, you then tell the city to move to other locations after telling your lawyers to say you'd fully comply with the subpoena when you had.
But before I send boxes over, I have to take all of my things out. These boxes were interspersed with all sorts of things.
Commingles the world.
Okay, did you hear that now? Okay, he had to take his personal things out. These boxes were intermingled with all sorts of things. I can't understand that, and that's not a good enough excuse. Why are documents mixed up with your personal belongings? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, all of us have moved before. You have packed up your stuff and moved from your parents' home to your first apartment, from your apartment to your first home. You don't mix. You don't mix, you know, your underwear with your groceries. And you don't make the mistake of packing up documents with your golf shirts and your golf shoes and everything. And I'm pretty sure the president had a professional crew come and pack up his stuff when he left the White House. I'm not buying that story. And why is everybody, you know, thinking that's believable? I can't get past that smell test. Sarge, I mean, is that a good argument for the former president that his
I don't know who I don't think he stated it very well, but I can tell you this much, that it's just because the General Services Administration, which is the organization that would do much of the packing for his personal belongings, just because they did in fact do the packing, and just because other members of his staff undoubtedly aided him in it, doesn't mean everything was done properly. And that he didn't have the right to ensure that the packing was done well. Even professionals make mistakes. So again, what I'm going to wait for is if he's going to take the stand, and I don't know if he will or not, assuming it survives these motions dismissed. I'm not even sure it's going to survive the motions dismissed thing based on let's assume it does, and he goes to trial, and he has to take the stand, and he wants to take the stand rather. I'd like to hear what the questions are to him and what he says under oath. And if not, if they want to bring up these statements to impeach him and impeach any other testimony or any other defense motions that defense makes, then let's see what comes out of it. No, I don't think he stated it very well. I don't see anything in it that is inherently obstructive.
Okay, so hold tight. I want you to hold tight. I'm going to play another part of the clip. Because this is not me saying anything. This is coming from the former president's own mouth. Listen to this.
Yeah, I know. Continue following up some of the things that are in there.
Hold on tight. I'm trying to get.
You're going to jail.
Hold on a minute. I thought I had that. I'll find that clip. But there's even more here, and I'm going to see if I can locate it. But, again, what you just said is true. We don't know. It's just an indictment. You know, people are indicted. Thousands of folks are indicted every day, but not necessarily guilty of the alleged crime. But this is his second indictment. And for a former president, that's amazing. And what I find also is amazing is that what people are failing to understand is that he said he was going to bring the best of the best, and that his best of the best are the ones who are talking. They're the ones who are talking to the DOJ and saying, well, this is what happened. This is what he did. And I don't think these folks would lie, because if they did, they could be indicted. Put that all together. I think these people are telling the truth because they don't want their ass in jail. I mean, look at Michael Cohen. He went to a luxury resort jail, right? You're laughing, sorry, but the thing is that now if you think about it, he said he was going to get the best of the best, and he chose who he said was going to be the best of the best. He told the American public that. And now he's called them all kinds of names and all this type of stuff. Yeah. This is your best of the best, and now you hate them because they're trying to save their own asses based on what you are allegedly doing.
Joe Biden said he's going to pick the best and the brightest, too. We got Karine Jean-Pierre as the press secretary. So that obviously proves he wouldn't mean it either. Look, we got to stand politicians.
Hold on, sir. Hasn't been indicted of any kind of crime, though, right? And she's not being called to testify against President Biden.
Again, I think we can allow for the fact that all politicians engage in hyperbole. Perhaps he didn't in every instance hire the best and the brightest, okay? I'm going to concede that. He, after all, he had Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, for God's sake. Granted. Now we're talking about they're trying to put him in jail. We're not questioning whether or not you should vote for him because of his judgment in personnel selection. You want to put him in jail for the rest of his life over this.
I don't think that.
He took the documents and they'll probably just slap him or give him a slap on the wrist.
I don't think the criminal justice system is supposed to be used to make a demonstration of giving a slap on the wrist. He's either guilty of a crime or he isn't. For me, it's black and white.
Sarge, hold on a minute. I said this earlier on. I've heard many other people. Okay? I've heard many people. People who hate Donald Trump. People who love Donald Trump. Most people believe he's guilty of these crimes or accusations or whatever you want to call it. But most of them I talk to don't believe he would do any time in jail. And I believe that. Because, see, here's the thing that, you know, if you put Donald Trump in jail, you know, it'd be like, you know, making him a martyr. Where, you know, just like how they imprisoned other folks that folks felt like were so great and this and the other. No, all they're going to do is try to break him down. I really don't think he would do time in jail. And here's why. Because if you look at our regular judicial system every day, there are people who should be in jail and don't go. They're not in prison. Money talks. And Donald Trump, I think they just want to strip him down where he's just going to be where he really has.
Now you've got it. Bingo. See, this is the point I'm trying to make here. I don't care if he goes to jail or not. This is a political prosecution. It is a gross miscarriage of justice in every sense. I'm not looking at this in a vacuum. I just heard Mr. Durham, under oath testify before the United States House of Representatives. I heard him say that in the summer of 2016, the liar John Brennan, who has lied under oath to Congress, told Barack Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, then Vice President Joe Biden, James Comey, and James Clapper in a security briefing that the Russia collusion angle was suspect. He wrote up a memorandum of understanding on the matter. So that means that the three of the highest officials in Attorney General Loretta Lynch was also apprised of this. They were informed by the CIA director, James Brennan, who hates Donald Trump, who said that there was nothing to the Russia collusion angle.
and they wrote a memo to that effect. The House of Representatives, the James Comer's committee have it in their possession. And they went, these truthful people in the Federal Bureau of Investigation went to a FISA court, which is the highest level of scrutiny for justification for issuing a FISA warrant, a surveillance warrant. They went to court. There is no higher level that you go than you go to FISA court. If everything submitted to FISA court must not only be corroborated, when you submit your affidavit to the court, you have to put in the upper left-hand corner, this has been corroborated. And the memo,
okay, so,
before they secured that warrant, before they secured that warrant, said none of this information is corroborated.
Okay.
Now, people should have gone to jail for that alone. James Comey knew it. Loretta Lynch knew it. Barack Obama knew it, and so did Comer. Comey knew it. They all knew it, and they still got it, and they renewed the warrant after they got the warrant for George Papadopoulos. They renewed the warrant three more times to spy on General Flynn and to spy on the Trump campaign and spy on the Trump presidency. Four bogus warrants that are supposed to be done under the highest level of scrutiny. And what about Joe Biden's documents that are next to the Corvette in his garage?
Wait, can I say something? Do you think Trump should...
They knew it was bogus.
...get away for insurrection? Okay. Do you think that he was innocent of that?
Hold on a minute. I have to let Charles just take a breather there. You know, yes, I put you on mute for a moment because you got to let us kind of like interject into the conversation. Appreciate you sharing, and I understand that you very, you know, very much, I can't use that word, but, you know, I appreciate you sharing this. But give us a moment so we can respond to what you're saying. You're throwing things on top of things and not letting us have a chance to respond. So hold tight a minute,
and Janet
to ask you a question. So Janet, go ahead and ask your question.
No, well, the thing I want to say is, all right, because of the insurrection, the people who testified and saying what happened during the insurrection at the White House in the Oval Office were Trump's people. It wasn't any Democrats. So I guess he's innocent of that, too, sitting there letting everything happen without calling the National Guard in. He didn't call the National Guard in. Pence did.
And also what I want to say this.
I guess everything that happens is okay as long as Trump does it.
Right. Okay, so here's the thing. I understand what Sarge is saying is that, if you're going to do this to Trump, how come you didn't do this to X, Y, and Z? I understand that argument. But that should have happened at that time. I agree. I don't trust
And look how long Durham investigated and didn't come up with anything.
Janet, please let me finish my train of thought, if you don't mind. But thank you. I get what Sarge is saying, and I hear a lot of people say the same thing. I get it. But here's the thing: is that where, if you break the law, you know, and if you're not compliant. And everyday people are arrested because the law enforcement says, well, they weren't compliant. In this case, Donald Trump chose not to be compliant. And back to what you said, Janet, with the insurrection and this, that, and the other. Okay, right. Now, cases, if Barack Obama was guilty of something, I understand that Biden is under investigation. You know, and then they want to bring in Hunter Biden. To me, it's kind of childish because, like, well, he hit me first, like kids do.
Durham didn't find out anything. After all these years and all that money, he didn't find out anything.
Well, the thing is that if it's enough evidence, and then when Donald Trump was president, he was president for 4 years. He could have went after anybody he wanted to, being the president. And they tried and didn't have enough evidence. Keep in mind, the Supreme Court and he made, you know, as the president, you have more Republican Supreme Court justices than Democrat.
And that's something that I call him Granny, you know, the former House Speaker, what is his name, from Beverly Hillbillies, Mitch McConnell. That's all Mitch McConnell wanted, was to have a Supreme Court justice that is majority Republican. That's what he wanted Donald Trump to do, and Donald Trump did as much as he could to do what Mitch McConnell wanted. Have you heard from Mitch lately? Hell no. You don't see him on the news. You don't see him defending Donald Trump. You don't see him saying nothing. He's just sitting back. As a senator of one of the poorest states in the union. Sarge, I'm going to reopen your mic. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get that out there. But also, but again, we don't know what the outcome will be. I want to ask Sarge a question, and I want him to be honest, and I'm sure he will. Do you believe Donald Trump knew anything about the insurrection, helped orchestrate anything about the insurrection, had did anything criminal-wise? I really want to know. Do you really think that
again,
he had no clue?
Now, in order to answer that question, it is critical, since we're talking about everybody's supposed to be obeying the law here, I'd like to emphasize what the law says. The supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution. Every other law has to be subordinate to those imperatives in the Constitution. I don't care if it's a dog leash law. They're all subordinate to the Constitution. Everyone. The Espionage Act, all of them. If they're not, then they have to yield to that document. Here's what it says with regard to what happened on January 6th. Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And now this is what matters to January 6th. On application of the legislature, or, parentheses, when the legislator cannot be convened, in parentheses, against domestic violence. Now, with that in mind, with that wording in mind, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States at that time, Donald John Trump, could not commit federal or federalized National Guard troops to the Capitol without the consent of the Speaker of the House and or the majority leader in the Senate and or the mayor of Washington, D.C. It has been testified to under oath, and we've seen the document from Muriel Bowles' office in Washington, D.C. We've seen the directive in the memo from Cash Patel, who is the Assistant Secretary of Defense, telling them the National Guard and the units of the active Army of the United States are available if you request them, because he cannot unilaterally commit them without their consent. And they specifically said they did not want them. So I keep hearing this, why did Trump send in the troops? Because he would have been acting like the dictator you say he is had he done so. They didn't want the troops. They didn't want, in fact, Nancy Pelosi said she didn't like the optics of armed troops around the Capitol before this all started. Despite the repeated requests from the Secretary, Stephen Miller and Cash Patel through the president, from the president through them,
to have at their disposal
and their request troops available to go. They refused to have them committed.
Okay, please pause for a second, sir. Okay, but here was a peaceful
I don't know why people keep disregarding it as though it doesn't matter.
No, I'm not disregarding. I'm listening to what you're saying, but I'm going to interject something else. You speaking of January 6th, right? Do you recall?
Yeah, why would you want to commit troops? To stop something that he instigated?
Okay, but let me ask you this question, if you don't mind, sir. When there was a peaceful protest going on, what happened? They brought in people to disperse. And what happened after that? Donald Trump comes down and stands there with what? Janet?
Jenna, are you there?
I don't understand what you're saying.
You recall the peaceful protest that was going on, and all of a sudden these officers come and make these people disperse?
Oh, when Trump walked across the street and put the Bible upside down, and they put gas out on everybody? Mm-hmm. And the general got upset? You talked about that protest.
Okay, so he wanted to do this, a photo op with the Bible upside down, and these people are peaceful protesting on our streets. Okay, he was able to do that because he wanted to do what he did, which was kind of embarrassing. But he couldn't say, hey, look, no, y'all don't go over there and cause the problem. He also said, we, not you, he said, we are going to go to the Capitol. We are going to go to the Capitol together. He said that. He did not go there. You know, words are very powerful. When you speak words to people, as you well know, Sarge, and Janet knows this, when you say we, I'm thinking you're going to join me. I'm thinking that the leader is going to be there. But he wasn't.
He wasn't there because the Secret Service wouldn't let him go.
Janet, let me finish, and then I'm going to let you, you know, elaborate, please. And I want everybody to do that. So I'm trying to finish it up so everybody can see, because now the time is 6:47. And we got to get ready for our next segment. The thing I'm just saying is that where all the excuses for Donald Trump, I just can't buy it. I cannot buy the excuses. I understand that where how folks feel like, well, again, like I said, everyone wants to say, well, they did it first. Well, okay, if you know. A case is not over until the investigation is done and complete. If there's an investigation going on with Biden, eventually it will have to be brought up and Biden can be indicted. If there's an investigation with the documents that Pence had, then let it continue. Or with Barack Obama, with any former president or vice president, let this investigation continue. But we know that there have been many times that this has been tried with different individuals, like even with Hillary Clinton. Okay.
But
all I want to say, and I'm going to finish, and then I want to go ahead and let you both wrap it up with the final words on that. Because at 7 o'clock, I want to get into the second topic regarding the submersible. I really wanted our round table with officers, but I can go a little bit over. I don't want to go more than 10, 15 minutes over the showtime. But the thing is, all I'm saying is that we're at this moment in time, we are dealing with the first president, former president, that doesn't have a squeaky clean record. And again, like I said earlier, you know, the process that the DOJ went through, you said that they didn't go by the law or that they didn't do it the right way. All right. Yeah, it might have been some major concern based on his actions and the things that he's done in his past. Donald Trump is not the perfect president. There is no perfect person, period. But Donald Trump has a history. This is a guy who has filed bankruptcy numerous times. This was the court. And there's documentation of what he and his father did. If you want to go back in time, you're going back in time on other individuals. Well, let's go back in time on Donald Trump. It's documented. And it's a reality. So with that being said, I want you to go ahead and say, you know, and just give me your final thoughts on this whole thing. You said that just like he says, this is a witch hunt. I'm assuming you feel it's the same thing too, right?
Okay. Well, again, whenever it comes, when we talk about Donald Trump, those of us who think he's being railroaded, if we do, have to clear up matters of fact that just aren't so that people believe to be true. You just did it in the case of what happened in Lafayette Park. The Inspector General of the Interior, Department of the Interior, which has jurisdiction over Lafayette Park, did a report. They submitted it under oath as to what happened that day. The United States Park Police, which is one of the agencies under control of the Department of the Interior, said that they did not clear protesters from the park so President Trump could take a photo op at the St. John's Church, which is near the park. This is what the Inspector General said. He said the relevant United States Park Police officials had made these decisions and begun implementing their operational plan hours before they knew of a presidential visit to the park, which occurred that day. The reason they were clearing the park was to enable the building of a security fence. What they had was improper coordination between the Secret Service and the park police. It wasn't done so he could have a photo op. That was in the sworn testimony from the Inspector General, Mark Greenblatt, of the Department of the Interior. See, these blown up in the untruths, and people repeat them ad nauseum. They get distorted down the line. So the truth, when it comes out, oh, that couldn't be so. No, the press doesn't report the truth the way it actually happened.
Okay, so
what's the point I'm trying to make about all of this?
What did General Milley say about it when he went across the street with Trump?
Jerry Miller should have been court-martialed for what he said. That's what I can say about that. What he said was expressing contempt toward an elected official in this case, the commander, which is a violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. He should have been court-martialed. Now, I know the Uniform Code of Military Justice because as a National Guard military policeman, I knew it backwards and forwards. I know the punitive articles in the UCMJ. And this man should have been court-martialed several times for what he said about President Trump. He's a uniformed officer in the armed forces, and they ain't supposed to be saying those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was
very upset. All I can say is that at this point in time, as we said, this is the second indictment of a former president, unprecedented, never happened before. Regardless if it's a Democrat or a Republican, eventually something has to happen, right? Eventually something has to happen.
Okay.
Tune in next week for more political conversation. All right.
Don't
got
your chickens in the hatch.
We have to change gears here. And because it is the top of the hour, I wanted us to get to the political part a little earlier, but I definitely want to talk about this submersive that imploded. Wow. You know, I said this before. Okay, so based on the story, there was five individuals. Of course, the founder or one of the creators of this company called OceanGate went down to see the Titanic. For some of y'all that don't know, this is a ship, which I'm sure you've seen the movie, that was on its maiden voyage and sunk by hitting an iceberg. Titanic has been underwater for over 100 years. Now, this isn't the first time that people have been able to go down and see it due to OceanGate. And the founder that built this submersive in order to go down and see it, okay? Years back, they only had unmanned submersive that can go down and take, video and share it up top for you to see. But this became something of where it was like a tourist thing if you could afford it. $250,000 per person. $250,000 per person, all right? There's been individuals, as you guys probably have seen on the news, that have this one at least, who has gone down and seen the Titanic many a times. But like I said earlier, and Sarge, you heard me say it, I've said it to other folks, like Murphy's Law, what can go wrong will go wrong. Any form of transportation or even any form of exploring can have its downfalls. Planes do crash. Cars do crash. Ships do sink. Things have happened. This is just the most recent maritime, I guess that's the term, incident that we know of. Now, I'll go back to where I said that social media can be cruel. Some folks are like a bunch of rich folks who ain't got nothing better to do with their money. And I was like, wow, that's pretty mean. Pretty mean. So let me ask you guys, and first I want to let the lady of the house respond first, and then Sarge, I want you to chime in. What was your thoughts about this whole thing that occurred? Because I'll say this. When they came up missing on Sunday and then they lost full contact, me personally now, and I'm not an oceanographer, I don't know nothing about submarines and everything, but I felt like that was probably an implosion. Because I've seen videos, and I've seen it where they showed how even the diving suits, you know, the ones where they got the thing on their head and this, that, and the other, where that can happen in a suit. And look at the depth there. What was it, 2.5 miles down?
13,000 feet.
Yeah, 2.5 miles down. So it's not going to explode. It's going to implode. Like, you could take a soda can and crush it. That's basically what occurred. And what really got me was where one of the guys who have been down there before showed an example of what the what an implosion does. And he had like a cup of soup. You know what the size of a cup of soup is, right? And he said that the one time they went down, they had a fixed one outside of the submersive. And he held it up and showed it. And that thing had shrunk to, well, let's put it this way. Imagine you having the large cup at McDonald's of a soda, and then you hold the smallest cup, I mean like the water cup, next to it. But that water cup used to be the size of a large cup. That's basically what had happened to this submersible. It just collapsed in on me. Janet, your thoughts?
First of all, pieces were missing. When you're down that deep in the ocean or you have pressure that is, like they said, like the Empire State Building on top of something real small like that unit. That's the thing with me, I think it should have been under a rigorous inspection to make sure everything was okay before it even went down there. And I would not have gone somewhere with somebody navigating with a game joystick. No. Mm-mm.
I
just don't feel like eventually something bad was going to happen anyway because of that.
Well, okay, when you said the game joystick, yeah, I saw the video. It was made by Logitech, but it's pretty much created in the form of like a PlayStation game controller, right? Yeah, that kind of blew me away too, because with the technology.
It broke apart. It didn't just close up. I mean, just shrink up. It broke apart. They found the aft and the head down there, along with other debris.
Well, yeah, because for the fact that a certain portion of it, of what it was made for, and the thing is, I want Sarge and I had talked earlier, and he's been following this whole thing too. The things that were, yeah, there's certain portions of it that is made by that is made of certain materials, and some portions are not. Okay, so it's not like the whole thing just crumbled in. Certain portions that were more susceptible to the pressure
closed in, while the other more, I guess, maybe parts of it that were not made of the same material was ejected from the portion that actually collapsed. Am I right, Sarge?
Oh, you got that right. There's a lot more to it than that. I mean, it's, look, we got to understand one thing. The environment at that depth is more inhospitable to human life than any other on the planet, because
that's
the pressure
right.
at that depth is 6,600 pounds or so per square inch of whatever it is that's down there. That is the pressure being exerted on every object at that depth. 6,600, that's over 3.25 tons per square inch.
Yep.
Now think about that. I mean, that, you're talking about in the range of a six-wheel cargo truck, and every square inch of whatever's down there. So technical divers, and they call technical divers, scuba divers, can work in a range up to maybe 130 feet, 150 feet. But they got a thing they call technical dive. And a technical diver has your special gas mixer, a special suit, special provisions, special training and all that. And they only go to 400 feet or so. World War II submarines, like the German U-boat and the American submarines, had a crush depth somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 feet with the more advanced submarines of that era.
Mm-hmm.
That's a submarine. You know? So when you're talking about nuclear subs like they got today, they got a maximum crush depth of somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,400 feet or 1,500, like your standard attack subs, nuclear attack subs or missile launching subs. They'll go about 1,400, 1,500 feet. This thing went down to 1,500 feet. Now, that would mean that it's got to be built very carefully. Now, you were talking about, Michael, about how you saw this video about how they had the living quarters, and then they took a loom and they spun carbon fiber around it till they got the desired thickness of carbon fiber. And then they took some titanium inflates and they glued them to the loom that they'd made out of carbon fiber. And then they kind of heated it so the carbon fiber on the surface would kind of meld together. And then they painted it with this anti-corrosion paint. And that's what they did. And this is like innovative. Nobody ever made it. In the past, they used to make these things out of homogeneous steel, maybe 6 to 8 inches thick all the way around. It was just pressure. So, but what is interesting about this is that, like I was telling you earlier, Michael, this is a case, eerily enough, of a confluence of hubris between the Titanic of 1912 and the Titan of 2023. And what is that hubris?
Mm-hmm.
When you are heedless of warning, not just that you're trying something different and experimenting with something different like Charles Lindbergh was and attempting to get across the Atlantic Ocean and pave the way for commercial air travel. He took calculated risks, true, but they were calculated. He weighed all of the risks and he tried to mitigate against them. This guy was listening, was heedless of the warnings that were being directed at him, much the same way that Captain Smith and the owner of the White Star Line did when they were warned about icebergs and ice floes in the path of the ship, and that they disregarded all that because they wanted to break a speed record from Liverpool to New York City. So they disregarded all of that. And then on top of that, this guy, Stockton Rush, who's the chief executive officer of OceanGate, the people who made this sub, he said something really interesting, that he didn't want his sub to be designed by or captained by 50-year-old white men because they weren't inspiring. I'm just saying to myself, this is like when you exclude people who might be the best ones to help you make something this risky, maybe you're not thinking everything through properly. You're not supposed to exclude anybody.
He was also quoted saying that safety, and they have it in quotes, safety is a waste.
Yeah.
Basically,
hubris.
You know, there's a waste.
See,
I'm like,
this is how
wow.
hubris can land you in trouble. Right. This is how hubris can land you in trouble, whether you're piloting the Titanic or whether you're piloting a Titan, hubris can be your downfall. Pride goeth before a fall.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, as I said, you know, we know the Murphy's Law that what can go wrong will go wrong. It has, I mean,
right.
History has proven that. You know, you look at, as I've mentioned before, you look at, you know, you look at the with NASA, the space shuttles that the one I'll never forget is that when we saw the liftoff of that one space shuttle,
Challenger,
and one of the
Challenger?
Yeah, of Challenger, right? And one of the during the liftoff, I'm telling you, at that moment, I felt like, well, that didn't look good. Because I'd never seen that happen before.
Right.
But in its re-entry, it exploded over Texas. Look at the world. No, wait a minute. There was two of them. There was two of them. There was Challenger Discover.
And the one on
Discover.
Right.
Yeah,
Discover.
And one of them exploded during re-entry. One blew up as it was lifting off. But the one where the panel fell off, that's the one that disintegrated in reentry, and when they went
right.
back and took a look at that, they realized that was the problem. That should have been addressed immediately when it took off, because that's a heat shield. And
right.
something as small as one panel falling off put that whole that whole thing in danger. Yeah, they made it in the space, but coming back was a different story because every bit of that bottom of that aircraft needed to be protected. And we watched what was going to happen before it did. Think about it.
Disintegrated, and then when it got in the atmosphere.
You can go back right now and look at that liftoff and see that one piece of panel fall off.
Yes.
And that was it.
Right.
Now,
and the Challenger.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the Challenger went, when they went to the throttle up in order to help achieve escape velocity to get out of the gravitational pull of Earth, and when they throttled up the O-rings that were supposed to keep the hot exhaust from the fuel in those
mm-hmm.
side tanks, that combusted caught
mm-hmm.
fire and
yeah.
caused it.
Right, the
O-rings,
booster rockets.
A couple O-rings,
yeah.
defective O-rings brought down
mm-hmm.
billion-dollar aircraft.
And those O-rings are probably
spacecraft.
A few cents.
Spacecraft, actually.
Technically.
Spacecraft. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but back to what we talked about with Titan, though.
Yeah,
and
that's what I was about to go back to.
This is what I don't want to happen. Because, look, the one thing about people that has enabled us to live the sort of relatively soft and comfortable lives that most of us live today is human innovation and human risk-taking. I don't want this to discourage people from taking risks. Like I was mentioned with Charles Lindbergh. You got to remember,
mm-hmm.
that was in 1927. Powered flight had only been invented in 1903, just 24 years earlier. Aviation was still rudimentary. He had to navigate by celestial navigation and dead reckoning. He had to turn a single-engine aircraft into a flying fuel tank. He couldn't even see forward because the forward part of the fuselage was one big fuel tank. He had to put a periscope in there so he could see to the front. He had to look out the side windows and through his little periscope. But none of that was because 12 men, you got to remember, 12 men had died because it was a $25,000 award. $25,000 back then was roughly equivalent to like, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 today. And 12 men had died in the attempt to duplicate what Lindbergh was trying to do. And
mm-hmm.
so, but he wasn't reckless, even though it was dangerous. Like I said, he took calculated risks. He weighed the risk, and he sought to mitigate them at every step of the way. And that technological advance, not really technological advance, but that daring, that ability, that willingness to take risks. Remember, there wasn't no air sea rescue services around back then. If you'd gone down in the cold Atlantic, you would have died of hypothermia probably in 25 minutes. undertaking he did led to the feasibility of commercial air travel, something that we all enjoy today, directly led to it, because people are willing to take risks.
Okay, so hold tight a minute, because now, and you're right, you know, if it wasn't for folks who took risks, we would not have air travel like we do. We would not have ocean liners like we do. And, you know, you learn from those tragic mistakes, right?
Right.
But let me ask you guys, what do you consider the most dangerous form of travel?
Oh, I know what it is. I used to be a, I used to work the highways and the state.
Yeah,
well,
I want the lady of the house first to share what she believes is the most dangerous form of travel.
I'll say an automobile, but Michael, you know I don't like being first, so I'm just letting you know.
You are the matriarch of the show, so I'm going to give you first dibs. Okay, automobile.
I'm going to stop talking.
Okay, so the automobile is what you said. Let me see what Sarge says.
Like I said, I worked the highways in the state of Illinois, and I saw the gruesome reality of the dangers of automobile travel. There's no doubt in my mind what it is. It's the automobile and the truck, particularly, and percentage-wise, tractor-trailer drivers, I mean, as a ratio of fatalities to what they do, is one of the more hazardous occupations in the country. So there's no doubt about it. It's automobile truck, by far, infinitely, by far, vastly so.
Okay. What I found interesting is that back in 2000, what I found interesting is that I read an article where this was, and I should pull it up and read it to you guys, but there was one that was said that really walking ranks, if not close to automobile travel, then above it. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute, what? Walking.
Walking is not an automobile or a machine.
No. I said form of travel.
Well, form of travel. Your feet are transportation.
Right. Your feet, that's how you travel. I said a form of travel, not transportation as far as a vehicle. I said form of travel. Walking can be a dangerous form of travel. And I read the article, and I have to take a look and see if I can bring it up again. I found that interesting because do you realize how many people get hit by cars? Not on a bicycle, just walking down the road.
Pedestrian.
In the article, and I'm just trying to – and just let me finish here. I'm just trying to rethink as I try to pull it up. It's interesting that a lot of people get hit in crosswalks, because people in automobiles feel like they can drive through a crosswalk and stop. They don't pay attention to the lines that are there for them to stop, even though there's a word spray painted saying stop. They still drive through the crosswalk. And I see folks every day who do this. They drive through the crosswalk. They got the red light. Let me see. They got the red light. It clearly says stop. But they're still going to coast on by because they want to be, you know, way up and ready to turn left or take off forward, whatever the case may be. But they don't see that person in the crosswalk. People in many states, but in certain cities and counties, there's no sidewalk. So people walk alongside the road, especially at night. Drivers can't see a person wearing dark, you know, material. Drunk drivers will hit a person that is walking down the road. A drunk individual will be walking down the road into oncoming traffic. So I found that kind of interesting that it's kind of like a It's kind of like I don't know if there's really a good what's the word I'm looking for
where they actually look into this and have data on it. But I did see something. I'm trying to pull it up and see if I got the right one. But they said pedestrian walking. Not necessarily you get killed, but you can. But they've been injured.
Yeah.
Many people have been injured being a pedestrian, just walking down the road or through an intersection. And I believe that to be true. And I believe it to be true more so now in this era, because people have their earbuds in their ear and they're not paying attention when they're crossing. They're so into looking at the video, they cross through an intersection, not realizing that the light is not green for them, or better yet, let's say, where they got the little man saying it's okay to walk. They just walk across.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, think about that. That those distractions, person who's just walking. All right, so go ahead.
Well, most crosswalks are accompanied by a sign that says that you must stop for pedestrians. When pedestrians
right.
crosswalk, you must stop. So that is that. But I got to admit, I usually didn't, you know, when it was a ticket that was kind of discretionary, that didn't require, like say, suspended license or driving under influence or reckless driving or, you know, driving a suspended license that didn't require me to issue a ticket. I'd say I did issue a ticket as opposed to a warning 50% of the time. But when it came to people who would recklessly drive to a crosswalk and force a pedestrian to have to step back, when I saw that, you are almost certainly going to always get a ticket from me. Because I'm acutely aware of how many accidents that occur as a result of that. I can't remember what the statistic was, but at the time I really knew it really well. I don't know how I got it all of a sudden. People getting hit trying to get through a crosswalk was clearly marked with signs and everything else, and the driver just decides they got the right of way over the pedestrian when the law says no, they don't. So, yeah,
well,
I get where you're coming from.
Exactly. But, you know, you see, you hear that the pedestrian has the right of way. You see signs that said ped exing or exiting, you know, meaning that, you know, a pedestrian will come through here. Here in Georgia, I mean, more so in the downtown area, because when it's like a lot of, you know, areas where there's a lot of people crossing streets and everything, and in downtown Atlanta, there's, you know, visual signs that tell you pedestrian, you know, area.
Yeah. No, they say yield to pedestrian in crosswalk. They say yield to pedestrian in crosswalk.
Drive right into the crosswalk, and then you got to walk around their car. It's like, dude, did you not read the signs? You know? But, and I want to change, I'm sorry, we're going to go ahead and go to another topic. We're going to just do a few things, but I wanted to bring that up because I thought that was really important when we were talking about, as far as, you know, the safest form of travel. Walking is one of the most dangerous forms of travel. People don't pay attention.
Let's not forget, by the way, modern day highwaymen.
Here's the thing. Just the other day, right across the street from where I work, I said, well, let me just walk over here. And there's a QT, a Quick Trip convenience place. You know, they serve all kinds of stuff. I said, well, I didn't bring any lunch. I'm not going to eat the place that's right next door to where I work. They make some great, you know, sandwiches. I'm not talking about the ones that you see sitting there in the little cooler. No, they actually do it. And I said, well, let me go here and get a sandwich. And it's one of those intersections of where they have a turn lane that has a divider from the regular traffic, right? And it has a crosswalk sign. It clearly has a marking on the ground of where pedestrian area, meaning if you're coming down the street, you're not going straight, and you're going to make a right-hand turn. Me as a pedestrian, I'm going to walk onto a little island, right? Can you visualize what I'm saying? I'm going to walk on a little island.
And it clearly says, there's a sign that says, yield for pedestrian. And I'm walking across there, and I look at this guy coming at me, or coming to going to this turn lane, and I went to step off. He just ran right past. He didn't slow down. He didn't stop. He just went right on through it, like he's going onto the freeway. I'm like, dude, had I stepped off that curb, you would have been in the wrong. Because you're supposed to yield for the pedestrian. It doesn't matter if I step into the crosswalk. If you see me on that island, you're supposed to slow down and stop and give me the right of way. Because
yeah,
the sign that you see, right, the sign that you see says yield for the pedestrian, for pedestrian. But people don't follow the signs that they see on the road. They ignore it. And that's how come I say that. It's an interesting thing that I read, that being a pedestrian can be just as dangerous as being a passenger in a car. Janet, you want to respond to that? You agree with that, or you think that maybe it's true?
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. And I'm looking, and I'm waiting for law enforcement to really, you know, I mean, because officers sit back, and I mean, we all know, officers will sit back in the cut and see, they know the areas where folks will speed and this and the other. But pay attention to these intersections where pedestrians are, and see the actions of the drivers are when someone's in a crosswalk, abide to what the sign says, pull them over. Give them a ticket.
Look, I'm going to tell you, man, I'm amazed that all these folks who are out there got valid driver's licenses, I don't know how they passed the written test. Because when I come up to, I don't know if they're just lying to me or whatever, but when I used to pull people over, they said, do you realize that you just failed to yield the right-of-way back there to the emergency vehicle back there? And they will come up with the most contrived reasons why they were not required to yield to an emergency. And I said, well, how did you did pass the written test for your motor vehicle license, did you not? Didn't they have that question on there? And they said, okay, well, never mind. You're going to get a citation for it. I mean, it would have been different if they apologized them. They didn't seem to know, so maybe this will help them get, you know, not to run into an ambulance.
What gets me also is when it says keep moving and they don't keep moving, coming off a exit ramp or whatever. You know, it's big letters saying keep moving, but they don't.
Yeah.
They stop.
Or in the event of an accident, look, the investigating officer is not going to do an accident scene reconstruction unless there's fatality. Get your automobile, if it's possible, off the roadway. That's why you got no-fault insurance in all these states. If your vehicle is movable and nobody is injured appreciably, get your vehicle off the roadway so you're less likely to get struck again. You cause another accident.
Exactly. So you guys, I want
people
to
just sit there act like they're going to reconstruct the scene. I got a big picture, and no, they're not going to do that.
Okay, so what I want to do, I want to change up real quick. Let me go ahead and do this quick drop, and then Officer Harper is here. He's listening in. He's at work, hopefully he can chime in a moment because we're going to change the topic here. This is very important, and I want to get you guys' thoughts and opinions on it. Let me do these quick drops real quick. And we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Cheryl Cooley of the all-female band Climax, and you're listening to The Michael Gay Show. Yeah.
What's up, y'all? This is St. James, and you're listening to TMGS, The Michael Gay Show. Tune in every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for interesting topics and awesome music. Now back to the show.
Well, thank you, Cheryl Cooley and St. James. By the way, check them out. Oh, St. James is throwing down some great stuff. And by the way, Janet, St. got some new stuff. He's going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
I promise. He's going to be back. That's some awesome stuff. Okay, so I want to change up the topics here. And I don't want to talk right now about, well, I'm gonna mix it up a little bit. Juneteenth weekend, there was a lot of celebrations going on across the country. But unfortunately, there was a lot of shootings. Unfortunately, many people lost their lives during the celebration. Here in Atlanta, Georgia, they are looking at having curfews for teenagers. Jenna, I think, what was it, 10 o'clock on weekdays, 11 on weekends? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Okay, so I wonder if any other jurisdictions, states, or cities, whatever, are doing the same thing, or because this has been brought up, and from what I understand, Atlanta has passed this. You can check it out and look. Atlanta has passed this new law for Atlanta, the city, not Georgia. But how do you enforce that? And do you enforce it in certain areas? Because that's a concern from a lot of folks. It's going to be enforcing more so communities of color. You know, how do you verify if this child is getting off of work? You know, do you call their job? How is that going to work? And you being an officer, and I hope that Officer Harper can chime in on this, what's your thoughts about this, that what Atlanta has already approved to do, their city council has already approved? Because just the other night I saw where there was a bunch of young kids hanging out at a convenience store. They all had Mustangs, and they all go inside the store, buy a couple of chips and items, and they're just hanging out, you know. What's your thoughts about this curfew thing? I'm asking SARS, do you think it's effective, and do you think that they're going to be fair on it?
Well, look, I think that curfew laws are nothing new. When I was growing up in Chicago, they were implemented. They were implemented citywide, though. They didn't single out any particular area of the city. They applied to all persons, at least in the law, the way the law was written. The law applied to all persons of a certain age, wherever you were in the city of Chicago. So the curfew was uniformly, I believe, 16 years of age. For 16 years of age or under, I had to be off the street at the time, night, like 11 o'clock, 11 p.m. But as long as the law is done in a manner like that, that's going to be up to the city council, and the discretion of the police officers to enforce it. Yeah, I think that police officers should exercise a certain amount of discretion. After all, it's going to be a city ordinance. It's not like it's going to be a state law or anything.
Correct,
still,
right. It's a city ordinance.
Right. And if they're, yeah, and it's only going to apply in the city of Atlanta, of course. But as long as it's applied with sufficient discretion and it's not done in a discriminatory manner, I have no problem with it. We do have a problem to an extent I don't think we've ever had before, unsupervised young people, particularly those that don't have two parents in the house, because it kind of lessens the odds that you got a parent around to keep them in line. And when we had the curfew in Chicago, man, every one of my friends had a father in the house. Every one of them, except one whose father died, and he's a truck driver, and he died in an automobile accident. But everybody else's father was in the house. So he had two parents to keep an eye on him and get him, hey, boy, say, goodbye. In the house. It's almost
11
o'clock.
So let me read this article real quick that Janet researched. I want to pull this up real quick. Juneteenth weekend shootings leave at least 12 dead, dozens wounded,
at celebrations across the nation. Okay, so that's 12 dead across the nation. All right. Well, 12 or more people die. Question is, are you questioning the celebration? Are you saying that we're, or are they saying, meaning the, this is from PET, by the way. Are you just reaching out and letting folks know that, hey, look, this occurred during our celebration of Juneteenth, shouldn't happen again, okay? So it says the incident included a mass shooting in suburban Chicago, right, where at least 23 people were shot, okay? Does that put a black eye on the celebration as a whole, or is this something that,
it shouldn't. What it does put, though, the question is not, there's nothing wrong with celebrating Juneteenth, no matter in what reason you're there to celebrate it. What is problematic is the confluence of the celebration of Juneteenth and the disproportionate amount of violence connected with those celebrations. That's what's troubling. It's not like it's 12 people were shot like in a normal weekend in Chicago. They're shot throughout the city. These people are shot in a very specific location, the specific locale of a Juneteenth celebration. So that was in Willowbrook, Illinois, where 23 people get shot. One of them shot to death. The only reason that more people weren't dead is because of rapid response and maybe poor shot placement by the shooters. I don't know. But whatever it is,
okay,
it's impossible.
Go ahead and finish your sentence.
Well, I'm just saying it's impossible not to notice the confluence of events. Juneteenth and the disproportionate amount of violence which contained within these events.
Okay, so what you saying that, so let me finish this a little bit of this here. Juneteenth celebrations were marred by 19 mass shootings that killed at least 12 people and injured more than 100 across the nation during the three-day weekend that ended Monday. The shootings were spread out across the nation from Baltimore on the East Coast to Southern California. In Willowbrook, Illinois, a suburban of Chicago, at least, in fact, Officer Sarge, I'm sorry, Sarge, you probably know this area, at least 23 people were shot Sunday, June 18th, 23. One of them fatally at a Juneteenth celebration at a parking lot attended by hundreds of people, the Associated Press reported. The DuPage County Sheriff's Office said the event was a peaceful gathering that suddenly turned violent when people fired multiple weapons into the crowd. Authorities did not immediately determine a motive for the shooting or make any arrests. Also on Sunday, at least one juvenile was killed and 9 others in downtown St. Louis. Authorities said the victims ranged in age of between 15 and 19 years old. And the individual who died was a 17-year-old male. Investigators recovered several guns from the scene, including an AR-15-style assault rifle, and arrested a 17-year-old. That's problematic. That's extremely problematic.
And my experience with Willowbrook is when I was there, it had one of the lowest violent crime rates in Cook County. Well, not Cook County, but in neighboring DuPage County. It's about 20-some miles outside of Chicago. But it had a very low violent crime rate. Most of the crime that occurred in Willowbrook was property crime. I mean, other than, of course, white-collar crime, it was a property crime. So this kind of thing is not – it's probably a relatively recent, but caused by the relatively recent rise in crime that is now spreading throughout the United States in anarcho-tyranny. Many of these state's attorneys are allowing to send on the citizenry.
Well, okay, so I want Janet to go ahead and respond, and then I'm going to go ahead and sit back and listen. Janet, you have a response to that, what I just read?
when I was still looking at, I was still thinking about the curfew for the teens, but, you know,
which is, it,
I,
right.
don't
it,
ha- I really
it,
don't
it,
have
it,
too
it,
much of a response.
Yeah,
I agree with everything you read.
Well, yeah, I'm glad that you're looking at that because it all entwines where, as I said, you know, the curfew thing is good. I mean, if you remember.
Well, they have, it depends on if you are with a parent, you know, if you're coming from work or, I mean, they have certain circumstances that allow a teen to be still out there. But I don't think there's anything wrong with a 16-year-old having a curfew from 11 till 6 a.m., 8 a.m., 6 a.m. In the morning. And I, or on the weekend, starting at 12 a.m. I think that for a 16-year-old, I think that's great.
Okay. Exactly. Now, I agree with that because there's nothing out there for you to be in the streets. Now, but then again, I had to think back to when I was a teenager and there was little house parties. But house parties are not like it was 30 years ago. I'm sorry. I should say 40 years ago. I'm 61. So, no, I wasn't going to house parties. I'll say a little over 40 plus years ago. Yeah, you had a neighborhood house party, ran until about 1 o'clock, no later than 2 o'clock. You were a teenager. But there weren't as many guns on the street. There weren't folks shooting people back then. But nowadays, it's a different world. And there's beef, there's gangs, bigger gangs, larger gangs, and everything. So times have changed. There's no doubt about it. I do believe there should be a curfew. And then people say, well, then you're violating that person's rights to freedom to roam and this and that. No, they're a child. They're still a child. And with that being said, according to what this new curfew law states is that where the first time of violation, they will talk to that individual and the parents. If there's a second violation, there's going to be some things that you're going to have to deal with. The parents are going to be are going to be charged. There will be fines, possibly jail time. Again, I go back to what I said about, is it going to be fair? Sarge said it should be. Yeah, we know it should be fair in every community. But will it be fair? White kids love to party just like black kids love to party. Kids are kids. So if there's a white kid out there after the curfew, is he going to be treated the same way as a black kid? Well, we do see videos. We do know that there's not always a fairness in racial profiling or whatsoever within certain jurisdictions of our police departments. And you
they
wonder
said if you're out there and you have a written excuse or you're with a parent, you know, they have all these, you know, other reasons why a person should be out there. But out there by yourself or, you know, or you partying at that time and that age, I don't think it's necessary for them to be out that late.
Okay,
especially
so
if it's a school night.
Let me give you an example. You're not out partying. You work at a major Some stores do not let teens work beyond a certain hour, okay? They're only scheduled to a certain amount of time. Some stores, they will schedule a teen to be off no later than 10 p.m. Many stores that I'm aware of. Okay, so if you're scheduled off at 10 p.m., you're driving home. Now, if the curfew is 10 o'clock during the weekdays, or whatever, or 11 o'clock, okay, if you're within that time frame, okay, cool, you should get home safely and fine. But let's say your employer, or let's say that, and I'm kind of like wondering here, if the curfew is 10 o'clock and you're scheduled to 10 or 10:30, and you're driving home and you get pulled over, like, where you coming from? I'm coming from work, blah, blah, blah. How does that team verify that's where they're coming from? The officer, I'm pretty sure, can call the store, but he's going to do that. And if he calls the store, is anybody going to pick up to verify this? My question is, how is the verification process done?
It depends on the family schedule on your child. So it's the family schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, they said it depends on the family schedule and the child. You know, so I'm quite sure if a parent knows there's a curfew and the child has to come home, be out of work by a certain time, like you said, Michael, would the employer make them work past that time, knowing that it's a curfew?
Well, I'm pretty sure that if an employer was to do that, that employer would probably be in violation of the law himself.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So. But I know some jurisdictions, though, that do issue work permits for those minors who are going to have to be out after curfew. Others, they just leave it to the discretion of the officer. And, of course, a lot of people say that's always problematic. So that would be one of the two things you could do. Employers would have these permits, which they could issue out to the minor, or they go to City Hall and make an application or whatever procedure they have in place. But, again, most places do leave it to the officer's discretion. So,
and they're saying if the child is loitering or playing around, they're not saying coming home from work or, you know, or church or, you know, something special.
Yeah.
Like you said, Mike, they're at the store hanging out. Right?
Yeah, in my experience, though, there aren't too many minors that are hanging out alone after curfew.
Every
time I ran into minors, it was a group of them, anywhere between three and more. So it's kind of rare you find a lone wolf minor in a curfew. Relatively speaking, that is, I'm not saying it's rare. I don't mean to say it's rare, but usually young people are hanging out in groups.
Right. But I know Michael, the other night he was talking about how a lot of teens hang out around stores and, you know, cause a lot of problems, you know, with people going in and out of the stores a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's what the concern of most curfew laws is designed to address. People are concerned about young people who are becoming increasingly problematic, it seems, in these big cities. That's what they're concerned about. And I'm thinking that when I was subject to a curfew, the crime problem with young people wasn't really that severe, and we still had a curfew. I'm talking about minors. I'm talking about people 16 and under. It wasn't anything near the level of violent, serious crime. Look at it. It was mainly property vandalism, stuff like that, would be the worst of it.
Yeah.
You know, vandalism,
that's the only
criminal mischief,
I know
stuff
about
like that.
Of me growing up is when they was rioting and they put a curfew out there saying that you couldn't be out past a certain time frame. Well, if you're not trying to loot or do, you know, destroy property, abide with the curfew. You know, I know my parents didn't let me out past that time frame, you know.
Nope. Remember, though, you just said the magic word, parents, plural.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is critical at raising children that understand limits. Because you literally double the likelihood you're going to have a parent that is going to be seriously involved in that child's life. It's not that single parents can't do the job. Many of them certainly do. Probably most of them do. But the thing is that when you have two parents in a household, you double the odds of having an involved parent, even if one of them is AWOL.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know what happened to Michael.
Michael, you there?
He probably dropped.
No, uh-oh. I didn't drop. Yeah. I was sitting here listening to you guys talk.
Mm. Yeah.
See, I do that from time to time. I just wanted to just shut up and listen to you two converse about what we were talking about. Interesting what your responses were. When you look back, I heard both of you say back when you were younger. But this is a totally different generation. It really is. It's a totally different generation that has a different aspect of life. I'm not going to say they're all bad because they're not. Fortunately, I work with two great twins. They're fraternal twins and very respectful. But you do have some that are not us as we were kids, right? The world is different. Trying to control young people is difficult. And that's what it is a sense of control. How some folks might look at it as a negative, it might be a positive to save their lives. You know?
No.
As I said before, back when I was a kid, I was quiet for a while. Let me speak, please. Back when I was a kid, go to a house party, no problem. Some fights would break out. Later on, you knew about some fights, not shootings like it is now. There are more guns than people in the United States. That's a scary thought. And unfortunately, there's more young people having access to guns than before. And then you look at some states like Florida, like Georgia, allowing you to own a firearm without being registered or whatever. Have a firearm without any, you know, background check or training. There's governors who are like making this the wild, wild west all over again in 2023. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, that's really what's going on. It's like, hey, look, only the strongest survive, and, you know, if you got to kill a person, stand your ground, do so. We got your back. So isn't it scary out there? It really is.
I find it really kind of interesting. Now
I have to say this. I want to say this, and I want to know thoughts about. And like I said, Officer Harper was scheduled to join us. He was here on the board. He's at work. He's a actual officer who's definitely active, and he's been listening in, but he's at work, so he couldn't really call in at the moment. So we'll have to have this round table again with all the officers. But I do appreciate Sarge calling in this Saturday, sharing his thoughts and everything. So, but this thing in Atlanta, I'm curious if other states are considering doing the same thing, or other, I won't say states, cities are looking at having these curfews and how effective they really can be. I wish it works. I truly do. I hope it works, you know, because really there's nothing really for kids to be out there. I understand it's summertime and everything, you know, but damn, kids, you all got your PlayStations, your Xboxes, your Nintendos and everything. You spending hundreds of dollars, or mama and daddy's doing it and everything. You know, at nighttime, go play the game. Why get in the street?
So you mean to tell me that you're not down with midnight basketball?
We already went over the fact that one of the dangerous things that you can be doing is being an automobile, especially at night. You know, so go home, play your games. You know, get up in the morning and go to your job if you got one. But don't be out in these streets. I think Sarge was trying to respond, and then Janet.
Yeah, so it sounds to me as if you're not down with the notion of midnight basketball.
I mean, Barack was kind of big.
Oh,
on
no,
that.
I knew about that. No, trust me, I know about that. But you know what? Midnight basketball here in Atlanta, which is not always played at midnight. See, people get the wrong perception. That's the name of it. But no, they start those games much earlier than 12 midnight. They don't wait until it hits midnight. They actually start those games around 9, 10 o'clock at night. And generally, they're over with before midnight. Janet, you have a response?
I can only go by my family, and I know that my children raise their children to abide by rules and regulations, and not mm-hmm. if they have a curfew, they went along with that curfew.
Right.
That's
yeah.
all.
I understand that. Truly understand that. All right, the time is now 7:52 p.m. on the East Coast. I'm sorry. I just wanted to say this. 7:52 p.m. on the East Coast. We have about 8 more minutes left on the show. And, again, want to thank everyone that's been listening in. But last 8 minutes, I'm going to go ahead and let Sarge say what he's got to say. And I'm going to let you know that next Saturday, we're going to have another great show, as we always do. And we're going to make sure that you get the information. I don't want to spill the beans yet, but go ahead, Sarge.
Well, to the issue of curfews, as long as we understand that children don't have the same constitutional rights that adults have, after all, their parents restrict their constitutional rights to what they can read, what they can see, how late they can stay up, where how geographically, how far they're allowed to go. So we understand children don't have the same constitutional rights as adults, nor should they. And so we do have an obligation at times to restrict some of their freedoms and some of their liberties. Now, the question is how much and how can we do it in a manner that doesn't intrude unduly. When you have a crisis mm-hmm. that is demonstrable, like you do with the rate of juvenile crime today in many of these big cities, I think a curfew is completely justified, provided it's done both constitutionally and fairly as humanly possible to do.
You remember truant officers? I haven't heard that term in a while.
I work with them all the time. They call them juvenile officers now, though. They call them juvenile officers now. They fold it under.
Now, this is what I wish Simon was on. Simon Shipp, who's also a co-host, and he's pretty much busy on the weekends. We truly appreciate when he's available, because a lot of times he's in California, and a lot of times he'll come in for about an hour, and then he has to go and take off and do a show. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it this Saturday, but I wish he was here at this moment to talk about that, because, yeah, you have the truant officers where, you know, during school hours, you a kid walking around, you know, and everything, they'll pick you up. They'd be like, how come you're in school, young man? What? You know?
Yeah. You know, you got to remember, too, that the schools have truant officers, but now most police officers have what they call a juvenile officer, and the juvenile officer mm-hmm. kind of folds a lot of those functions of the truant officer into everything else related to juvenile jurisprudence.
Yeah, they'd be in an unmarked – well, no, they didn't have unmarked cars, but they had their uniform, and they saw during school hours a kid out and about just hanging out and everything on the corner and everything. They'd pull over and be like, no, wait a minute, you need to be in school, and they would investigate and find out why you're not in school, you know, get you back in school or go to the parents, you know.
You pick up a juvenile, you got a whole bunch of different procedures. When you pick up a juvenile, there's a whole bunch of different procedures you got to go through anyway. You can't treat them like you do an adult. You can't put them in an adult facility, holding facility.
No.
You got to notify the parents.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I'm curious about that. That could be another conversation I'll get with Timon on that and look at, you know, because, I mean, the way I looked at it back when I was younger, my butt better not just be hanging off, you know, at the local store or just hanging out in the corner like, you know, you see now, you know, and just out there and not in school. You have to either be in school or in the house, You couldn't just be on the streets. See, you had to be at one of the two locations, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of parents have the rule. At sundown, mm-hmm. you go down. So whenever the sun was below the horizon, you're supposed to be in the house.
No. No, when the street lights came on, you better be in the house.
Or
the porch, okay? That's one thing. Unless you already made arrangements with your parents, you're going to be at a friend's house, but you're going to be indoors. You know, you're going to be at somebody's residence, not just hanging out on the streets. You know, and I mean, that was then, but now if you look at it, I mean, I'm not going to say if you look at it, it's just the reality that young kids, you know, their parents, unfortunately, don't have control of young kids. They're not just black, even white kids. I see it every day. But I have to share this that blew me away the other day. Here's this young man. Comes into my department. I'm in electronics. By the way, you guys, I work for Walmart. Yes, I'm in electronics and photo lab. And he has a, Xbox. And he asked me, he said, hey, you got the batteries for the Xbox controller? I'm like, yeah. Very seldom do people ask for this item. I'm like, oh, okay, he must really be a serious, you know, gamer. And he has a few friends, and I get the item out the locked glass case. You know, everything is locked up now in most stores, right? So I get it out, and I go to the counter, and he's chit-chatting with his friends, and they're like, hey, look at this. They said, look at this PC. And they're looking at the PCs that we have. He actually says, PC, what does that mean? And they look at him crazy. I'm serious now. He said, no, serious, y'all. I'm serious. What does PC mean? And I'm in awe. I'm like, okay, this guy got to be, you know, I mean, okay, so they say, in, you know, the N-word, my N-word, you don't know what PC mean? He said, no, I never knew. But you buying something for a game. You don't know what PC means? I think everybody here listening knows what PC means, right?
Yeah. Don't you say yes. I got one sitting right here on my desktop.
How? I'm just saying. And that really bothered me. And you guys might wonder why. Because here's a young kid who's spending some good money on products for a game, and he don't even know what the what PC means.
Well, I tell you, Michael, we got kids today who can't write cursive either. So there's a lot of things. With
right.
education that's being that's lacking today, so
mm-hmm.
I don't think we should be surprised
right.
at what they don't know.
Say that again.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
They felt like it wasn't necessary to write cursive, but that was mandatory back in the day.
Yes. Well, I'm more concerned about their proficiency at reading and basic mathematics. And in Baltimore, I remember hearing just the other day. Out of 33 schools in the district in Baltimore, not one of the students tested at state level proficiency in reading or mathematics. Not
or it's
one
gone down.
Student.
Yeah, it's gone down, right.
Wow.
I'm more concerned about that.
It's going down. And the thing is, what's so sad about the educational system is acceptable of what level used to be. They're allowing it to be acceptable. See what I'm saying? Like, okay, well, let's drop the criteria. I guess is the term I'm going to say. Correct me if I'm wrong. In order to pass a test, well, let's make it lower. You know, not just for black communities, just for the kids in general, regardless.
Yeah.
And they're lowering it. They're lowering it. And to me, that should be a concern for everybody, whether you're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, it should be a concern. Now, homeschooling is a different thing, you know, and I really like for us to really come back to this topic, because you guys just made me think about something as far as the educational system, you know, how are we trusting them? Think about it for a minute.
When I went to school, we had to diagram sentences. Diagram sentences. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Does anybody teach that anymore? No. We had to literally break up a sentence into its constituent parts and explain how they related to each other. Do they do that anymore at home? I mean, the reading, the level that they expect people to read at was literally, now that I look at it, given what I see college level being, we were expected to read at college level in our junior year.
I have to say this. What I found interesting too, and we're going to talk about that next week. I know once I say it, you guys are going to respond to it. But what I found that individuals who are doing trade school type work, going to trade schools, are actually making more money than people who have spent 2 years in college. Think about that. And starting their own businesses. Did you know that?
Yeah. Think about the reality.
If you really think about the reality, a plumber, electrician, HVAC, you know, which is, of course, for some folks who don't know, where you know how to do air conditioning and heating systems, and especially with all the differences that are happening in the even now, in Texas, where it's 100-something degrees, units are going out, and you got to call somebody to fix it. Them guys are making money. They're exhausted, but they're making a lot of money, right? But people who go into college for 2 and 4 years in degrees, sitting at home trying to find a business to hire them. But going to school for a trade is becoming more lucrative now. That's how it used to be.
Before they started farming jobs overseas, it was a lot of trade jobs out there. You even had trade in school, shop, you know. I mean, there was things that you could do in school that would help you if you got out, you know, and graduated.
Right.
They knew how,
you had wood,
you know.
Shop. You had wood shop, you had automotive and everything. You had all kinds of different trades you could study in school. Let me see here.
He had dropped, so I'm going to bring him back in. I'm going to have to go, Michael.
Thank you so much, Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis. Thank you so much. And we went five minutes over time. I'm going to shut it down. But next week, we do have some great topics and things. And in fact, that's something that we definitely have to talk about, with the trade schools. You know, it's an interesting thing that I've been reading. I'm sure some of you already know, but we're going to talk about it next Saturday. Janet, are you still there? I just want you to say your goodbyes. You still there?
Yeah, goodbye, George. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, and it was a pleasure to talk to you, Janet. I look forward to many more of the same.
Same here.
Okay, Sarge, your final words before we go?
Well, back to what we started off the subject with. I want to thank you for joining us.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I just like to beg of people out there who are listening, please, to the extent that you can or to the extent that you care to, because I realize not everybody's all that concerned about accuracy. just acquaint yourself with as many of the facts in the Trump indictment and the Trump case as you can. It doesn't matter whether you like Trump or hate him. Just as long as you get the facts of the case right, that's okay with me. Just the facts. That's all I want. And then we can kind of work at the political angle and what people think about it, because there are so many things that the mainstream press regularly distorts because of their contempt and their disdain and hatred for Donald Trump. They just don't tell the truth or the facts. They just don't.
Okay, so what we're going to do.
I read and I look at the facts. I am a news junkie 24/7 from the time I get up till I go to bed. So I look
trust
at the facts.
I can understand why people are put off by Donald Trump, and I don't have a problem with people who just oppose him if they don't like him or they don't like his policy. But when it comes to matters of fact, I think.
I knew Trump from New York because I'm from upstate New York. I know Trump before he was on The Apprentice. I knew Donald Trump. Yeah.
Okay, well, with that being said, I want to close it out myself. Thank you both. I truly appreciate it. You know, the things that we're – and again, thank you, Sarge, for joining us and sharing, your opinion, your just opinions, not just in political, but as you being an officer of in law enforcement. I really appreciate you joining us, and welcome, and you're always welcome to come back and share with us. For me, it's where I look at the topics, I look at the things that people are talking about and think about. People ask me, well, what's your thoughts about it? Yeah, I do share some things, but I like to have conversation, and I do listen to everybody. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm just an individual who just is happy to have a great platform where we can discuss and debate the issues that we deal with every day and the stories that we hear every day. So, again, thank you both. Thank everyone for tuning in on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you next Saturday with more conversation and more interesting, topics, of course. And that's all I can say. Great show. Thank you, guys. All right, we're going to get on out of here. Have a great remainder of your weekend, and we'll see you next Saturday. God bless.
Thank you, sir. You're a scholar and a gentleman. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to it.
bonus exclusive.
Oh, Please let me make a true confession. I had never been in love before. But since you came in my direction, I've had a change, a change of heart. Them girls, they come a dime a dozen. I fed them things they love to hear. I was never wanting for a lover, but I never knew what true love was indeed. So who, baby? Girl, I'm in love with you. Sure as the sky is blue. Just let me prove to you that my love is true. Who do you love? Are you for sure? Who do you love? Let me prove my love to you. I used to be the great pretender. The very first time I'm for real. Girl, you got me listening to my heart now. You gotta believe how I feel. I'm ready to become the giver. Now that I realize that it's a give and take. Oh, love has broken my defenses.
Another chance, hoping that I find romance and a love of friends. So let's go and get a story that'll never end.